can you expect the grades?
I'm planning to grade on Thursday, right after the final, and I should send you an email by the end of Thursday. I won't submit the grades to the registrar until later, just in case you have questions or anything. Anything else? Yeah.
Is the final open notes?
Final is open notes. You can bring anything except means to communicate with other people, like laptops, and please don't bring your slides on or anything you have on a laptop. Just print out anything you think you might need, because it's all unfair to people who don't have a laptop. So, yeah. Last semester, somebody brought their laptop, and I had to have them, throw it away. No, he kept it, but he had to shut it down. Yeah, which was unfair to him, because then he didn't have any notes, but I don't know. It's hard to find a balance. All right, any other questions? Well, if you can think of anything during the class, you can also ask me. Again, I'm going to be available tomorrow and the day after tomorrow between 1 and 5 for any questions. And on emails the rest of the time. Okay. What question should I go over first? Yeah.
Three.
My favorite subject.
Sample solutions. But anyway,
Now the question is, how many bits does it take to write this the string in your code? So what I do now is the number of bits I sum up over all the letters. For each letter, the number of bits it takes times how many times it shows up. So for all the L's in LOL football, I will need 4 times 2 bits. Because I have 4 L's, and each L takes me 2 bits to write. Now for all the O's, there's 3 O's, and each needs 2 bits. And the F's are, there's 1 F, but it needs 3 bits. The T's are 1, which needs 3 bits. Same for B, same for A. So that gives me 8 plus 6 plus 4 times 3. It's 14 plus 12 is 26. And find the Huffman code. We found the Huffman code. We determine how many bits there are. If we wanted to write the string using this encoding, we would have to write the code for L, 00, the code for O, 01, the code for L, 00, F, 1100, O, O, T, sorry, 04, B, 110, A, 111, and L, 00. So that's the code for the word, the string, using this encoding. And this is the code L, O, L, F, and so on. Any questions? The main idea here is that there's not a unique way to make these codes. There's multiple ways to make these codes, so don't worry about making your own code. If you follow the rule that you always need to merge the two smallest frequencies, then you're okay. It should be good. And the whole thing with left is 0, right is 1. If you mess that up, don't worry. If you can't remember if left was 0 and right was 1, you can change those. Just keep it consistent. Always use, you know, 1 for left or 0 for right, for left. Whatever you choose, be consistent with. Okay? If there are no questions, we can move on to another one. Another problem. Yeah. 4. Okay. 4. Alright, so let me bring it up. This one is about songs and how they grow. So you have to choose between big O of n, n log n, n squared, and n squared log n. Okay. So this one is, this song is a little tricky. But there's a hint there, and it says, assume that between 1 and 3 animals get on per floor. So if you look at the song, it talks about animals that, each verse talks about animals that get into the elevator, right? So we can say that between 1 and 3 animals get on per floor. What you also notice is that as an animal gets on in the elevator, the number of, so verse 1, if you look at the numbers, it says 1, 2, because there's 2. If verse 2, it says 1, 2, 3, because there's 3. Verse 3 talks about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. So, because between 1 and 3 animals get on per floor, between 1 and 3 we add to that count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 at the end of the verse, we add between 1 and 3 syllables. So that is like the McDonald's song. Each verse adds a constant amount of syllables to the previous verse. And there's also counting, right? So it's like the Days of Christmas song. Let me see what I wrote here. Right, so there's two things in this song. One is that each verse adds a constant number, approximately a constant number of syllables compared to the previous verse. You always add something that's approximately the constant. And then the second thing is that there's also counting involved. And so that makes it an n squared log n song. Okay, any questions about this one? So no matter what the song is, you have to ask two questions. One is the verse size approximately a constant? If you count the syllables, are there approximately the same number of syllables in each verse? So that's one question. The second question is there counting involved? And according to those two questions, so songs, question one is, are verses approximately constant number of syllables? And the question two is there counting? Okay, so like Little Monkeys or something. If the number of verses are approximately a constant, the number of syllables are approximately constant, and there is no counting, so big O of N is question one. It answers yes. The song answers yes to question one. And the song answers no to question two. Big O of N log N answers yes to question one. And answers yes to question two. So if the verses are approximately a constant, but there's also counting, like the bottles of beer song, then it's n squared, n log n. The n squared one answers no to question one, and answers no to question two. And big O of n squared log n the verses are not approximately constant, they grow, so no, but there is counting. So let's apply that to the next two songs. Alright, so this song, so question one, are verses approximately a constant number of syllables? Or, if you don't want to count the syllables, you can just count the lines. How many lines are in verse one? So, song, verse, number of syllables. Okay, verse number one. Let's do number of lines. Okay, verse one, how many lines does verse one have? Four. What about verse two? Five. Three. Six. Four. Seven. Alright. So you get the idea. So are the verses approximately constant number of lines? No. Each verse adds a line to the previous verse. So question one is no. This song answers no question one. Question two, is there counting involved in the song? There's no counting. I don't see any numbers. So question two is no. kind of song is this? Yeah, so it's this category. Time Square. The first one was N squared log N because there's counting. Okay, so good question, good question. This one we can't really look at the number of lines, but so the number of lines, if there's, oh, they're very wordy songs. This one, the difference is very subtle, but we can see that there's always some number added. So there's always going to be between 1 to 3 syllables added to between these songs. So for this song, we're going to say number of syllables. And I don't know, first one, let's say it's going to be, I'm going to make this up, but like, let's say that first one is 15 syllables. Verse 2 is going to have plus 1, right? 16 syllables, because we had 1, 2 in the first one and 1, 2, 3 in the second one. Third one will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so 18. And so on, right? You notice how it's growing with between 1 to 3, approximately constant. So question 1 is going to, this song is going to answer no to question 1 because they're growing. Question 2, is there counting? Yes, there is counting. And so then, what category does that fit in? With knowing yes. N squared log. Then the third one. Because if you get it wrong, you'll get points. If you just give me an answer and it's wrong, I can't really give you any partial credit. So I definitely encourage you to write as much as you can, explaining why you chose the answer that you did. So you're definitely, if the answer is right, then you can just write about it. Any questions about this problem? Well, think about it, and you can bring them tomorrow or Wednesday. Okay, what's the next question that we're going to talk about? Seven. Seven. Okay, good. So, this is question number 7. And question number 7 says, let me go over this. I don't spend much time here. But you have a list of integers, and there's n integers in the list. And how fast can you answer the following questions if the list is unsorted? And A is, what is the second biggest number in the list? So how would we, if you see a huge list, imagine a list with 50 numbers on the screen, and I'm asking you unsorted, and I'm asking you, what's the second biggest number in the list? What's the method that you use to solve this problem? How would you go about solving it? What's your algorithm? Look through the whole list, find the largest number, and then maybe look through the list again to find the second largest. So how long does it take? How many numbers do you have to look at to find the biggest number? All of them, which is n. How many numbers do you have to look at to find the second largest number after you found the largest number? You go through the list again. All the numbers. Minus 1. So that's 2n minus 1. And what is that a big O? So if we find a big O of something, we get rid of the lower order term, and we get rid of the constant. So that's finding the second largest number in the list. Okay? Are there two numbers in the list that add up to 1,000? What's the method for doing this one? So again, imagine a huge list of unsorted numbers. You have to answer the question, and not only answer yes or no, but tell me which are the two numbers. So you actually have to find the two numbers. How would you solve? Is I equal to 74, yes, make count 1. Since I equal to 74, yes, make count 2. No, 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 yes. Let's say the last one is 74. And then you have the count of how many times 74 appeared in the list. How many numbers do you have to look at to solve this problem? All of them, which is how many? N. So N operations and numbers you have to look at. Let's go. The last one is the product of the numbers divisible by 7. How many numbers do you have to look at to figure out if the product of all of them is divisible by 7? N, right? So this was C. For D, you either have to compute what the product is, and I think in this case you actually have to compute the product. We had shortcuts for so the product is divisible by 5, but in this case we actually have to do it. So multiply all the numbers, see if the result is divisible by 7. N numbers you have to look at, which is also a big O. And you probably are going to want me to go over A2, right? Yeah. That makes sense. Okay, let me see what that
was. So the same question about only this time the list is sorted.
So I'm going to erase this part. Okay, so now you have a big list, but this time it's sorted. So let's see what changes. It's the second biggest number. What is the second biggest number in the list? How do you solve that problem? Who wants to tell me? There's a huge, huge list of numbers. How do you find that? How do you find the second biggest one? Anybody else? I know you know it. How do you find the second to last person in the phone book? What's the method? I know, why would you want that? But, you know, congratulations, you're the second to last person in the phone book. You won nothing. I don't know. Whatever. How would you find the second to last person in the phone book? Yeah. Go ahead. Exactly. So you look at that second to last person. Open the phone book, the last page, and look at the second to last person. How would you find the second to last number in the list? Oh, I gave that away. All right, so the biggest number in the list is the last number in the list because the list is sorted. And the second biggest number is going to be the second to last number in the list. How many numbers do you have to look at to find the second biggest number in the list? A constant, right? 2, maybe. Okay, let's say you look at 2. So, it doesn't matter how big the list is. What if the list is 5 numbers? How many numbers do you have to look at? 2. If the list is a million numbers? 2. Okay. 2, what's that a big O of? It's called big O of 1 because it's a constant. It doesn't matter what the size of the list is. The number of numbers you have to look at is 2. Are there 2 numbers in the list that add up to 1,000?
All right, this is the hardest one.
So I'm going to go over it. So that's your list of numbers. You look at the first number, and you look at the last number. And let's say this guy is 124. This guy is 900. And this guy is 800. Okay. Why is 124 plus 900? That's a little over 1,000, right? It's not good. You move this guy here. To the second to last. It's 120. What is 124 plus 800? That's small, right? So you go over here. Let's say you need 185. Let's make this better.
plus 185 is still too small. So you move again. 200 plus 800 is 1,000, and then you stop. So at any point, you move to basically to the right with this guy, and you move to the left with this guy, and you never have to touch a number twice. You're only going through the list basically once. You only have to look at n numbers, no matter what. Because you don't start when you, let's say that, let's assume that this was 210. 210 plus 800 is too big, so that means that there's no pair for you in the list. Right? So at any point, you're trying to find a pair for one of the numbers. When you find a pair for the next number, you're not going to have to go back to the beginning. You always have to go back from the point where you left off. So you have to look at each number one time. So you only have to look at n numbers. And that's the number of operations that you have to do. It's n numbers, which is a big O of n. And again, the fact that it sort of helps because as you try to find pairs for the numbers, when you're done with one of the numbers, you can pick up on the other side from where you left off with the previous. So that's the method that gives you a big O of N kind of thing. What would be another method to do this? Another method which doesn't give you such a little time is to, this list is sorted, right? You start with 124. And you know that you need to find its pair. You need to find 1,000 minus 124, which is 876. So you want to find this number in your list. How do you find something in a sorted list? How much does that take? What is, like, it's like finding a name in a phone book. So you split it in half. And then you only search for half of the list, and then you split it in half, and you search for half of the list. How long would it take to find 876 in this list? How long does that take? Log n, right? So looking for a number, you can write that down. Looking for a number in a sorted list is a big old log n kind of operation. So to find the pair for this guy, I need log n operation. So this is the method number two. So I have log n for the first number. Then I need to find the pair for 185, which is again looking for a number in a sorted list. Again, log n. It's actually log n minus 1, log n minus 2, and so on. But we're going to approximate it with log n. So each number, you need log n operations to find its pair, n times log n. Because you have n numbers in the list, take log n operations to find each number. So this is also a good method. But n is better than log n. We said that n is smaller than n log n. And we try to make it as little number of operations as possible. And see how many times does 74 appear? Yes. Yeah, you get points for both of them. If you can explain why. Yeah. Okay, so how would you find 74? How many times does 74 show up in the list? How would you do that? What's the method for solving that problem? Plus whatever constant.
solve that in the story of this. Exactly. So you have to look at all of them and multiply them. There's no way around that. So what is that? How many numbers? Because it doesn't matter if those are sorted or unsorted, but you have to look at all of them. Any questions? So the question is for number two. Good question. To look like it doesn't look good, right? Right. Okay. So the question is for number two. If you get some kind of fraction, is it okay to round up to the next integer, right? The highest integer. That's a good question. Okay. So my answer is that it's not totally wrong, but I would prefer if you did some kind of decimal. And people do this, you know, I give this example all the time. The average American household has 2.5 children. That doesn't mean that they have half a person. That means that the average is 2.5. So if you do something a lot, if there's a lot of samples, when you average out, it can be, and that's okay, to be a decimal. You can leave it as, 8 over 3 or 7 over 5, that's fine. You can do a decimal if you want, 2.5, that's fine too. Yeah?
For 17, is E the source?
Okay. 17. Okay. That's another good question. So, the way I defined source. Okay, list of sources. Okay, so you're talking about B, right? The way I define sources, I said it's a node that doesn't have any incoming links into it. So a source is a node for which there's nothing like this coming in. That's my definition. So there's no such links going into it. Which means that it's either a node that only has stuff coming out, or it's something that, a node that doesn't have anything. Because I said that's a node that doesn't have incoming links. So if it's an isolated node like E here, that is a source, yeah.
So it's also a sink.
It's also a sink. Very true, very true. Okay? E is also a sink. Yep. Because a sink is a node that doesn't have anything like this. So that means that it can either have stuff coming in, or it can be just an isolated node. Yeah, so E is both a sink and a source. Any other questions? Any else? Yeah. If you miss it, it's not going to be a big. The other ones are going to be bigger. You kind of have to go by that definition, but I understand it's confusing, so it's not going to be a big deal.
In my mind, I was thinking that a source is only having an arrow going away from it, and right. If it's only having arrows going into it, by that definition, it would be included by your definition.
Yes, exactly. So the way I defined it was with no incoming links. So then. If you go by that, then isolated nodes are a source, and they're also a sink. Yeah. It's not a big deal, though. Like, I understand this. Yeah?
When you do 9B.
Okay, sure. So what's the method for finding the median of these numbers? Bigger than 500. What's the method that we used?
Well,
in class? The fast method or the slow method? Any method, really. How would you answer that question if your life depended on it? Sort the list, and then what? Right, so see what's the, so you have 51 numbers. Which number do you look at? 26, yeah. So sort, one method is to sort all the numbers. You have 51 numbers. Look at the number that's in the middle, the 26th number, is that 500? Is it bigger than 500? Yes. Is it smaller than 500? The answer is no. Okay, what is another method? Yeah. You can leave, it depends on the method. If you're using this method, you have to sort the list. Otherwise, it's not going to work anymore. But let's see, other methods? Anything else? Anybody else? Yeah. Okay, so the second method is, if you imagine the sorted list, right? All these numbers in the sorted list are smaller than the median. All these numbers in the list are bigger than the median. But that is still the case in the unsorted list. The unsorted list is just this list, sorted, scrambled around. But this still holds in the unsorted list. So what you can do is count how many numbers are smaller than 500. Okay, somebody volunteer to do that? You,
or I can, yeah.
23, so this is our list, right? 23 here. And how many bigger than 500? Of course. Okay, so this is 500. 28. So this is what the sorted list would look like. Do you think that the median is, where is the median? Is it to the left or is it to the right? Which side? To the right? To the right, yay! Okay, so the median is somewhere in here, right? We don't exactly know where, but what does this mean? Does this mean that the median is bigger or smaller than 500? If this is sorted, the unanimous answer is bigger. Good. Okay, so what's the answer to the question? Is it yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Does this make sense? So you have two methods to do it. You can either sort your list, which leads to a very straightforward, yes, this is the median, you know exactly what the median is going to be, and so on. Or you can just count the number of numbers that are smaller than 500, the number of numbers that are bigger than 500, and then imagine the sorted list, where 500 is, and then you're going to be able to see where if the median is bigger or smaller. So if the number of numbers that are smaller than 500 is smaller than the number of numbers that are bigger than 500, the median is bigger than 500, and if the opposite is true, then the median is smaller. Does that answer your question? Anything else? Yeah. Number 19. Number 19, sure. So this says that there are 23,700 kinds of bugs, and two people are playing this game. That's the first weird game of, I'm thinking of a bug, you have to ask yes, no questions, and you have to ask as many, you have to ask the questions in the smartest way possible. What's the maximum number of questions that you'll have to ask? So what is a smart way to ask a question? So let's say that you're faced with all these bugs. They're on a wall. I don't know why you have nightmares. But anyway, you have 23,700 bugs. And I'm thinking of a bug. What would be a smart way to ask a question? A yes, no question. What would be the first question to ask? How would you ask that question? And how do you figure out what is a good question?
Okay, if you play against a kid, if you play against a kid or somebody who likes to lie, the kid might change their guess, right? If you guess if you say, you know, is it a fly? If they thought of a fly, they're going to change their answer, right? So, what's a good way to ask questions?
Yeah.
In the worst case, right?
Yeah.
So the first question, so we had 23,700 bugs. Ideally, the first question splits the set exactly in half. So after the first question, you're left with 23,700 divided by 2, which I have here. That's 11,850. So that's after one question. So this is question one. You're left with half of the box. How would you ask question two? The same way, right? So ideally, after question two, you're left with half of what you had before. 850 divided by 2 gives you 5,925 after question two. Question 3, 25 divided by 2, leaves you with 29.5. Well, you can't really have this 0.5, you can do this if you want. So this kind of leaves you with this many bucks. Maybe you should round it out, because... And so on. So you keep each question. The point of this problem is that if you ask the questions the right way, each question splits the number of bugs that you have to deal with in half for every single question. So what is the number of times you can split? What is that called? What is the number of times you can split a number in half before you reach one or less? The log, right? So there's two ways of doing this. If you have a computer with log, you can just say log base 2 of 23,700. If you don't, which is fine, so you can just divide the number by 2 until you reach 1, and I'm going to write down the last, there's 5, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 13. So question 13, you left with 5 bugs?
Yeah.
So you keep dividing by 2 until you get to a number that's less than or equal to 1?
Yes.
Okay.
And then you count how many times you've divided. 5 divided by 2 gives you approximately 3, 2.5. Question 2 will be 3 divided by 2, about 2. And then question 1 is 2 divided by 2, equals 1. Sorry, I went the other way. All right. I think this was 13, 14, 15. So basically, you have to do this 15 times before you reach 1, which means that the number of questions... Yes?
Is it each divide is a separate question, though?
It's one yes-no question, right? So like, okay, so we started with 23,700. Let's say that half of them have wings and half of them don't have wings. Do those bugs have wings? Yes. 11,000 in the neighborhood. No. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? 20? Is that what you said? Yeah. Okay. All right. So this one is just staring at the scratch and figuring out what the bug is. But this is a different kind of bug. I'm going to use, let's just go over it and see if we can do it just like this. So the first one says when thermostat is clicked, you kind of read, we said that line means you kind of read the temperature. So the blue part says the sensor value. There's a temperature sensor, and it actually is a thermometer,
and you can set the temperature to what that thermometer says. It's like reading the temperature. And then you go into a forever loop, and you say temperature is smaller than the setting, then you activate the heat. So what is this? What is this?
You kind of have to visualize what's actually happening. So what's happening is that it reads the temperature. Let's say the temperature is, let's say your ideal temperature is 70 degrees. So ideal 70 degrees. And that's what you have it set, that's the set that you want. You want it, you want your room to be nice and warm at 70 degrees. What this thing does is that it reads the temperature. And let's say the temperature is 65. So ideal, this is the setting. And the temperature is 65. Okay, so it reads the temperature. And if the temperature is smaller than the setting, so this is a forever loop. Forever, if temperature is smaller than the setting, then okay. So it reads the temperature 75. Is the temperature smaller than the setting? Yes. So it activates the heat, right? It activates the heat, and then it goes back into the forever loop. It's pretty much stuck in the forever loop. Okay? It activates the heat, it makes the temperature 66, but the problem is it doesn't read the temperature again. So it keeps the value that it's read in the beginning, but and it activates the heat, but even though the temperature goes up, you never read it again in the forever loop. So it means that you're going to be stuck with, instead of thinking 65 degrees, when it's actually the temperature gets, you know, hotter. The temperature gets higher and higher. So the problem with this thing is that it only activates the heat once. Or it makes the heat always on or always on. Let's assume that your setting is 70 and temperature is 85 in the beginning. It reads the temperature and then it goes into a forever loop and says if the temperature is smaller than the setting, then activate the heat. The temperature is not smaller than the setting in this case, so it doesn't do anything. But the problem is that if winter comes, it's never going to read the temperature again, and it's going to keep thinking it's 85, and it's never going to turn on the heat. So the problem is that it's always leaving the heat either on or off. So the bug in here is that it needs some kind of temperature reading in the forever. And in the lecture slides, you should have, I want to make sure that you have the actual good code for the thermostat, the one that's correct. So then you have to look to see if you have the correct version to compare it to. The second one, this is A. What B does is you read the temperature, so it reads temperature, same thing. Repeat until temperature is smaller than the setting, and then activate the heat, and then you read the temperature. So that at least has some kind of reading of the temperature inside of it, which is good. Now, let's start with the assumption that the setting is 70 and the temperature is 65. What happens in that case? It reads it, is the temperature, it says repeat until temperature is smaller than the setting. What does the repeat until loop do? It stays in the loop until the condition is met, right? So, does it go into the loop at all in this case? Well, temperature is smaller than the setting. Temperature is 65, the setting is 70. So it's not even going through the loop. So it doesn't actually activate the heat when it should, right? What happens when the temperature is 85? The temperature is 85, it repeats it, and then it says, repeat until temperature is smaller than the setting, which is not true. So it goes into the loop and it activates the heat in this case, right? So it basically doesn't do anything if it's too cold and it activates the heat when it's too hot. So the problem is that it turns on the heat when it's hot. That's the bug.
that's the answer that matches the situation. Questions about this? Yeah.
So the first one you said that we see C and E, but that choose one search.
Oh no, for the first one, it's C. Because it's a leaves the heat always on or always off for A. And then for B it's A. So the answer for A is C. And the answer for B is A.
Thank you.
are there the 10 exams in 1 day? Right. So at this point, I could either translate the k to 10, or I could work with k and then do it at the end. So maybe I'll do it right now. So now every k I replace with 10. So 10, 10. This is k times k minus 1 over 2. So it's going to be what? 10 times 9 over 2. A k over a 10 over. And this is another 10 over. So this is going to be 9 minus 1. Okay. So now I only have to count the AND gates, right? In this guy. So I have one here, this one. One. Plus I have a bunch here, right? These. Which are 10 times 9 over 2. And that's all my ANDs. The 1 plus 4 to 5. I'm surprised with how many people that know about it, you know? Uh-oh. Oh, maybe he did. He sent that to me. He emailed me. Well, yeah, this was it. Oh, interesting. Interesting. You can't, but... That's very interesting. I really thought they would like the cell phone.
I
could
see that.
Well, what would you like?
I don't want to pay for paying $30 for a piece of shit on something.
Well, you should have said no password feedback.
Oh, no, I want feedback.
Oh, I see. Well, I figured that most people have a cell phone.
Yes, but texting.
You're right. But they have to pay for it, Facebook anyway. So.
So.
Yeah, wow.
Texting is not the way to do it. Well, what is the way to do it? What's that? An app? But my phone doesn't have apps. My phone is a crappy phone.
Best Buy's giving away with a cheaper phone. Any service.
Yeah, but you have to pay for it.
No, you have to pay for it anyway.
No, you don't. I don't have. I've got a prepaid crappy phone.
Well, then you could get an app on your laptop or something.
Right, but that's another problem. Because then that you encourage having people having laptops in your phone. I don't know.
You don't want computers in a computer class.
Yeah, I actually don't. Because you would be surprised how many people don't pay attention and just like.
Yes, but then the question is, if they can still learn well on the tests without paying attention, are we really testing them for the right answers?
Probably not, right? Yeah.
Right. See, people should be able to come and then fail the tests. If they don't, if we're not penalizing them, for coming late on the test, or that was the purpose of that. If they don't do it.
Well, how do you make a measure of people's, like, how well they're doing in the class otherwise? I mean, I guess that they might know all the material, right? Then it's their problem that they took the class.
Yes. And they should be able to then come in late and pass all the exams because they know the material.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a waste of money.
I agree.
What we are doing now.
No, but they can always, like, nobody came to me and said, I don't want to buy an iPad. Let's find an alternative for the attendance. You know? Oh, shoot, I forgot to show the comic.
See, current classroom techniques are not testing your eligible material, like your class in particular,
right.
All classes. So testing your ability to be a good citizen. Come into class on time, that you participate in discussions. It doesn't really matter. If you know the material, then you should be able to pass.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, pass. They pass. They pass even with no attendance. You know?
Why are we rewarding people who are know the material less, but are good citizens?
By coming to class?
Yeah. What is coming to class really prove?
I don't want to talk to the walls, you know? It's selfish. Okay, I admit it. It's selfish. I want to have a lot of students in my class.
Sure. If you're going to admit that, sure. That's right. a valid reason why, but it's not testing.
Right. I mean, if I would be totally willing if somebody tells me I don't want to come to class. I'm sorry. Yeah. If they tell me that, I'm willing to negotiate.
I have questions on the homework. Should I just catch you tomorrow?
That would be great. Okay. We can go somewhere else to do that right now if you want.